This podcast is supported by Understood Explains. As parents, we are often having to figure out things as we go, and that is very true for our children's education. And to help you out, I want to tell you about a podcast called Understood Explains. This season is hosted by teacher and special education expert Uliana Ortube, and she discusses all the things you'd want to know about individual education plans, or IEPs, what they are, why they're needed, who benefits from them, and what to expect when you have meetings with teachers. I could have really used this podcast when my son had an IEP for speech when he was six. I was overwhelmed trying to understand the process and what everything meant. The episode on Understood Explains, Does My Child Need an IEP, was the kind of info that would have really helped me get the most out of the educational support of the IEP for my son. And if you need that kind of support, I really recommend this podcast. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. Welcome to Mom in Mind. I'm perinatal psychologist and host Dr. Kat. There's more to the story than just postpartum depression, and this podcast aims to share it all. From personal stories and lived experience to experts who break down the ups and downs of life from getting pregnant, pregnancy, perinatal loss, and postpartum adjustment to parenthood. While this is not psychotherapy or medical advice, it is all of the stuff you ever wanted to know about mental health and new parenthood. Welcome back, everyone. I'm so glad you could join us again. Today on this podcast, we are going to be hearing from Ann Wanland, who is a new mom. She's been working in maternal child health for most of her career, primarily in East Africa and doing other humanitarian work. She is sharing her story of how she was caught off guard by her experiences trying to manage her anxiety and mood during pregnancy and post-childbirth, and realized there was a huge neglected part of maternal health that she had no idea about. That is the experience of a lot of people who come to share their story on this podcast. And it is still happening to way too many people where they are surprised and overwhelmed by the experience of new parenthood and new motherhood. Ann shares her story and shares how she has decided to dedicate her life to addressing this issue through Canopy, a social impact company focused on preventing and addressing common maternal mental health conditions. Ann shares her story, how her personal experience affected the work that she is doing now, what she wishes that other moms knew, and also discusses some of the changes that she'd like to see in maternal health and mental health. And honestly, the more we can share this information with everyone, the better off everyone will be. It is really hard to know that you're going to need this kind of support. It's really hard to know that before you're experiencing it. But just like other things that we are educated about, maternal mental health, perinatal mental health conditions, and how they might impact people, it's really important for people to be educated about this so that if it happens to them, they don't have to be blindsided. Ann shares with us parts of her story that resonate with this and has the same hope that I do, that more and more people know about these conditions, what options they have, what help they can have, and how to get through it. So let's meet Ann. Welcome, Ann. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate you writing in and wanting to share your story. And I really appreciate specifically personal stories, but I just am always so fascinated by how people come to whatever it is that they come to in their life, what has led them to decisions and places of work and types of work. So yeah, I would love to know and start off with that. What is your work and how did you come to it?
Yeah, so I have been working in maternal and child health for most of my career, mostly in East Africa on nutrition programs for moms and babies. And I think I've always just been the most committed to issues that are kind of rooted in prevention or kind of early intervention things, you know, intervening before someone is in crisis or desperately needs help, because I think that's where you can often have the greatest impact. And maternal nutrition, prenatal nutrition, and getting really effective interventions out to many, many, many moms of many, many, many babies has always had a lot of appeal to me. I have a background in humanitarian work. I had a personal experience being in Haiti in 2010 during the earthquake, when I saw the worst human suffering that I could have imagined. A lot of people in very desperate situations, and felt a connection to people who were going through something, because I was there too, and I was going through it with them. And I always wanted in my work to have that connection and feel that real sense of unity in whatever hardship or whatever someone was facing. So those are kind of the connecting pieces for me and why I've been working in maternal and child health for most of my career.
Yeah. For sure. This podcast is supported by Factor. If you want stress-free and ready-to-eat meals for you and your family, then Factor it is. These meals are fresh and crafted by chefs, and all of that means that in 2 minutes, you can be eating a quality meal that you can really taste because it's never been frozen. You just heat and serve. Yesterday for lunch, I had the honey mustard chicken with green beans and potatoes, and it was so full of flavor, and it was also just the right amount of food to keep me going for the day and feeling good with the amount of protein that I needed. And what's cool is I'm going out of town for a little bit, and it was really easy to put the delivery on pause and set it up for when I return. Head to factormeals.com/momandmind50 and use code momandmind50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box. That's code momandmind50 at factormeals.com/momandmind50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
How did you kind of get to East Africa as a place to be doing that work?
Yeah, it gets back to that wanting to do community level work. I had been working kind of in the policy space and felt really far away from people and issues that I wanted to be affecting. And a friend of mine from grad school said, oh, there's a job opening that I think you would be perfect for. It was running an organization in Rwanda that focused on providing resources and education and support to expecting and new moms who were struggling with malnutrition. And so, yeah, I moved from Washington, D.C. to Rwanda. I lived on a farm for the first few months in a tent, which was very much kind of rooting me in the community. I didn't live there for too long, but yeah, it was exactly what I wanted to do and what I needed to do personally and professionally.
So Rwanda was for how long were you there?
That was almost 3 years in Rwanda. And then after that, moved to Tanzania for a few years, also working on public health and nutrition programs for moms.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're really, like you said, like being with people, getting to see and feel and provide direct, I guess, impact, so to speak. And I'm assuming that those programs were helpful and working because you were there for so long.
Yeah, that has always, for me, been a really defining thing. Like, I have to feel like I'm working or doing something where I can, the impact is measurable, like something that you can say from here to here, like we started here and we ended up here, and we're pretty sure that whatever we're doing is really working. Because unfortunately, in international development, especially, you know, years and years ago when I started doing this work, there's a lot less focus on where are the resources going? Are we doing things that are really helping people? And a lot of the way we were helping people was very top down. And I, you know, there are lots of, I think even in the US and healthcare, examples of kind of that top down kind of care, that top down health. And I love that in like international development or developing countries work that you're doing there, but then also now what I'm seeing here working in US healthcare, that there's much more of the patient voice being heard, or it's starting to be heard a little bit, or at least there's this awareness that that is an important part of actually delivering things that work for people.
Right. Not just somebody in an office thinking this is what's going to help and not even knowing if it does.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Right. So then you came back to the US and...
Yes.
Yeah. So what happened for you in terms of getting into like the kind of perinatal world for yourself?
Yeah. So I got pregnant while I was in Tanzania. My husband and I got pregnant, and it was, looking back on it, I can be a little bit more reflective and a little bit more honest about what was going on. But I had been on medication to help manage my anxiety. And
prior to pregnancy?
Well, prior to, and then I weaned myself off. Actually, I didn't have any doctor really I could talk with in Tanzania or in the US anymore. I hadn't had a doctor in a really long time. And so I just looked online about how to do that safely. And it was a really, really awful process because I had been increasing my own dosage, be able to sleep at night and to get through days. I had been really having a lot of, I had a really hard time managing being in a very, very intense 24/7 operational role and having some kind of hardships related to work and just kind of trying to process all of it, and then became pregnant and realized this wasn't actually a safe medication necessarily for the pregnancy. And I weaned myself off and then had a really hard time during pregnancy. I couldn't sleep. I could barely sleep. And my husband would say, listen, I feel like you need some coping strategies. Like you need something to help you get through this. And it was really affecting our relationship. At the time, I didn't really know what I was doing, but the kinds of things were, I was relying on him for basically everything and trying to keep tabs and kind of keep control over him and where he was. And because it made me feel a little bit of relief, but it was not healthy for him and not healthy for our relationship, certainly. And it got a little bit better when I moved back to the States and started, you know, being close to my family the third trimester and really separating myself from the things about work that really were not healthy or good, and spent time basically kind of healing a little bit, but was having, I started my care with my OB, and never once did I mention about the medication that I was on or my experience with my mental health or what was really going on with me. Cause there was no time or place to do that. There was no opening in the conversation to be like, well, how are you doing? How are you feeling? Right. Nothing like that. Instead, I had chronic kidney infections.
Oh, no.
So random. I have no idea. They were just starting in Tanzania and had really been managing my own pregnancy because my OB was not like that engaged or concerned about them. And then got sort of a talking to when I got back to the States, like, why haven't you been on an antibiotic suppressing these? This is really dangerous. And felt a lot of shame around that. Like I had already started failing and had been worried, you know, knew that because I wasn't sleeping and because I was feeling so anxious, spent a lot of time every night reading the same studies about the effects of anxiety on developing baby. And it was just a really, really challenging time, not at all what I had thought it would be like. And despite having worked in maternal and child health, it made me realize that I literally had no idea what I've been doing. I mean, kind of, I knew some stuff. I had developed a very specific expertise in nutrition, maternal and child nutrition, but the experience of motherhood was really so important for me to actually understand what supporting moms should actually look like.
Oh, right. For sure. Yeah. It is just so hard to, I mean, you can hear about stuff and maybe conceptualize it a bit, but once you're in it and you feel the depth of what that feels like and the intensity, it's eye-opening in a lot of ways. But what it typically does, I don't know if this is true for you, but it can almost like make you more compassionate for other moms, but it doesn't necessarily make you more compassionate for yourself.
That is a very important insight.
Right. I wish it worked both ways. Right.
Very true.
Yeah. It's a tough one for sure.
Yep. Yeah. That's absolutely true.
Right. So this is now you came back to the US, you had that. It really sucks to feel that shame from anybody, but also from a provider. And I hope that that's not the intention on their part. I don't think it is, but that lands in a certain way.
It really does. And it's something that I've reflected on a lot since, you know, over the years. And so the long story short, I realized that maternal mental health was a really big gap and that something that I really wanted to address from a public health standpoint and start thinking a little bit about what it could mean to actually, you know, have mental health support, access to care, and even know how to handle these really challenging and really common things that a lot of us experience during this period early, instead of kind of what happened in my experience, which is it was at my son's 1 month well child visit that I had my first depression screening, which is great. I'm glad that we're doing those screenings. But at the time my husband was at the appointment with me, which was great to have that support. But I couldn't talk at that appointment without crying. Like, I couldn't say a single word. I couldn't ask a question. I had no way of communicating. And the doctor could see that. And she looked at me compassionately. Like, I think she felt bad. Like, she was not a bad person, but there was a real disconnect between getting that screening and how clearly I was doing, which is not good.
Right.
I was not coping. And I think that when, just to get back, because I don't want to lose it, that compassion, you know, for other, I think this is very common, this experience of just feeling so much compassion and caring for moms and babies and, you know, other people, that absolutely there was no part of me that felt compassion for myself. During that time, there was no part of me that was like, you are doing your best, you are okay, you are enough. There's no part of me that was talking to myself in that way. And it's a huge, huge gap. Because we all need to be directing that compassion inward. Because that also means you're going to direct it outward too. You know, if you're bringing it into yourself, you can also bring it to other people, other relationships.
Right. That's absolutely true. And really hard to do when you're in it like that deep. I guess when you have a little bit more distance from it, aren't so intensely impacted by how it feels that you can reflect on it and be like, oh, wish I could have been nicer to myself. It's just so hard to do in the moment.
Yeah. And there's a lot in the experience that you're kind of explaining away or trying to rationalize or process. And, you know, getting back to, you know, I totally agree. I don't think the OBs were, the intention was trying to create a feeling of shame in me. Of course not. You know, I think they were just alarmed and wanted to help right away. They wanted to do something and were worried that something hadn't been done earlier. And I think, but I do think a lot about my birth experience and the things that stick out to me about the interactions I had with nurses versus OBs versus, you know, the people who were there to kind of provide care and support, and the people who are more there to clinically assess and provide a medical intervention, and how differently I felt about those two categories of two broad categories of people, the care people and the intervention people, and how they kind of feel like two different things pulling at me. One, on the one side, I don't feel very good about the OBs or my experience with the medical, like many, 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 many of us. But I do feel good about the people who were, you know, saying it's going to be okay. And, you know, providing a little bit of education, a little bit of wisdom here and there. It's just a totally different feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And there's, I like how you described the difference between the people who are there to provide care and the people who are there to clinically assess. That is such an important distinction. And it's not like the clinical people don't care at all. It's just like, I always think it's weird. Like we are entering their workspace. This is like, they're just there doing their job, right, which is fine. And they're doing what they need to do. But right, that's not in their training.
It's not. And that is absolutely something that I think, you know, there are so many misaligned incentives in healthcare that mean that, you know, the things that you spend time doing as a physician might not be the things that you really want to do, but that's how things are, you know, paid for, reimbursed. And I think that many, many, many physicians out there wish they had more time to focus on the care parts too. Right. And don't like the feeling of outsourcing that based on, you know, talking to a lot of people who want to see change too, but it's the system that's kind of preventing that from happening.
For sure. In part, that's the insurance companies and whoever the payers are.
Mm-hmm. Yes, totally.
So we drifted a little bit away from your personal experience. I want to get back to that and then come back to the policy stuff, and what you're doing now. But like in terms of your personal experience, you know, you're describing your experience during pregnancy and during the birthing experience. And then in the postpartum, like, it sounds like you knew that something wasn't quite right, but how did you get to help if you got to help?
Yeah. Well, I think that's a very sad part of my story, which is, I mean, I think there are probably a few elements that aren't very uplifting, but for me, I actually never found someone to talk with. I reached out to a few different kinds of things and for different reasons, you know, scheduling, cost, the resources that I was, you know, starting to engage with weren't quite right. And I didn't want to get back on medication. I know that was an option for me, but I think I was just too scared to go back on medication because of what had been happening before, you know, for me, where I was, you know, increasing my own dosage. And I didn't want that feeling again of not being able to rely on myself or have coping strategies. And part of the challenge for me is that I had experiences before with therapists where I had felt like I was trying to say the right thing, almost like I was trying to please them in the session rather than, you know, having a really honest conversation. And I think my first experience with therapy was actually after that Haiti experience. My work kind of mandated it. They said, you need to go talk to someone. Well, they gently mandated it. They weren't like, you do this or else. They were like, really, you went through a big thing. Like, you need to go talk with someone. This is not like a normal thing to go through. And at that first and only appointment, the therapist told me about his experience in the 1989 San Francisco earthquake. Wow. And I thought, well, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Your instincts were right.
Yeah.
Hopefully, I don't know. Sometimes therapists use personal experience to connect and whatnot, but there's also a way to do it where it doesn't take away from somebody else's experience.
Yeah. I felt myself kind of trying to make him feel better about the experience. Yeah, and I thought, I'm not sure this is really gonna help. And I understand that is probably an anomaly. And they're like, you know, but there, I think these little experiences, especially if you're not very familiar with what you can get, you know, is available to you.
Yeah.
Can make you feel like, oh, well, I'm not sure I want that particular experience again.
That is so true. Yeah. That is so true. And I will say too, like after you've gone through something as massive as that, let's say it's hard to be vulnerable anyways, but then if you've gone through something that big and it's that hard, it's hard to then like have an experience with a provider like that and then to try again.
Yeah. You've hit the nail on the head. I think that's exactly what it has felt like for me. And I think the other thing I've really struggled with is, and something that I feel really hopeful about helping affect this, is talking about difficult experiences, like the way we're talking now, I don't know that I've ever had a conversation like this with anyone, gone like this. Having that space and having being able to give some voice, even if it feels slightly imperfect, like not exactly what I want to say, but just being able to say it, I think is, or and feeling like you have a space to do that, I think is just so, so important.
Yeah, it is. It for sure is. Because otherwise, what happens? I mean, it stays inside. And I don't know, like for most people, when stuff just stays inside, it takes on a life of its own. You just like start thinking and overthinking and double thinking and like whatever happens in there, it gets all mushy and like a little warped and all that stuff. It does. I don't know if you could like point to a place in your brain where you're like, oh, that's what's happening. And that's why it feels better to not, you know, to verbalize this or to feel through it or whatever, but it does. It just helps.
Yeah, totally. And I think, you know, one of the things that I feel really excited about is we already started talking about compassion, but, you know, I read a book that was about compassionate mind training for postpartum depression. Mm. And it basically, at least the most important, I mean, there's so many wonderful things about it, really talking about what's happening in our bodies and, you know, biology and stuff like that, really understanding and shifting blame from oneself to other things, like these other factors that are creating this for us. It's not our fault.
Right.
But I love it because I actually think that this feeling that I have had, like feeling ashamed of different things, like my, you know, the medication stuff and, you know, different experiences I've had. I actually think that shame and compassion are such, compassion is such a great antidote to shame. And that if we can create more of that compassion and more of that inner compassion, that that's such a good way to get people to feel open to talking with others and open to sharing their experiences. And
yeah, I agree with you 1,000%. It's just not, I mean, it's not in the water yet. You know, like I think we're trying to undo a lot of stuff and societally that's really big issues. Like you were saying, like the systemic issues that are impacting us, the reason, the bigger reasons why we feel terrible sometimes, or maybe a lot of the time, but also just like old ways of thinking that like, you know, whatever those things are, like stiff upper lip and bootstraps and all this other weirdness. Like, I don't even know what it means, but it means you're not supposed to have feelings.
Right.
And it means you're not supposed to rely on people. Right. Right.
Exactly. You're not supposed to ask for help.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Really bad ideas.
Don't, whatever you do, no matter how much you're struggling, don't ask anyone for help.
Yeah. It's so toxic. But I mean, we've all, it's just, that's how we, it's been internalized, I think is what I'm trying to say. So in some way, like what you have realized for yourself that like, you don't obviously don't want to feel that way, how you were feeling. You sort of have to swim upstream a little bit. Like you're against a current this.
I love how you put that. That's exactly right. And it's kind of hard work.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
It's actually hard work. And it's even the nature of just engaging in hard work is actually really good for you and really can be so productive. But you're so right. Because if you just kind of go with what society is saying and what maybe we've internalized and learned over time, we will not get help. We will not talk about these issues and we won't feel better.
Right. So, I mean, this is why I really appreciate you sharing your experience, because this is part of it is, you know, remembering that we are human and that we all go through things. There's like not one person who gets through this without something to talk about. But when you're left to feel like alone and that there's not support, and it messes us up, to say it lightly.
Yeah, it really does. And I think that one of the hard things is, you know, I think there's so many things that feel so specific about motherhood and this whole experience, but there's so many ways to kind of get it wrong. Like, the nuance is so critical. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's not correct. It's not precise enough to say that I felt like a failure, even though sometimes I did feel like I was failing. And sometimes I actually did feel like I was a failure. But at the same time, there were moments, even during those periods, when I felt like I was doing something good, or I felt thing. Mm-hmm. So many things are true at once. That's how it, everything is true at once. Right. And that's why it's really hard, because I think a lot of times, like, you know, I look back at pictures and I think about memories, and they're so special and they're so happy. But I also know at the same time, there is so much pain, those same moments, same exact moment, I could be feeling wonderful and terrible. And that's motherhood. Right.
So complex.
It's so complex. And I think sometimes that makes it harder to talk about, because we don't want to be voicing something that doesn't feel like true, you know, totally true.
Right. So based on your experience and all of the work you've seen in the world, like, what do you kind of wish that people were taking away from, I guess, moms in particular when going through stuff?
I think a lot of us spend a lot of time thinking that we're not quite bad off enough or not quite suffering enough to get help or get support or reach out. I think a lot of us feel like, well, somebody else has it worse. At least I have this, or I can just kind of put my head down and get through it. And it's such a heartbreaking thing that we all do, because, you know, a lot of us really, really wanted this pregnancy, or really are so proud about this specific thing or that specific thing. And, you know, but I mean, just because we can get through it, you know, can make it through a day, doesn't mean that we don't deserve to care for ourselves in ways that make a really big difference in how we feel and our relationships. And so much of the perinatal experience is not just the physical side. I think there's complete overlap with the emotional side of it, your mental health. There's just complete overlap there.
Yeah.
And you cannot have health without, you know, mental health in the perinatal period. And it's just, you know, and it's never too early to start working on that and thinking about that and really taking care of yourself.
What do you wish we were doing differently? We meaning like everyone.
Society
and systems. How should we fix all of this?
Well, you know, it's really hard because we have right now, I think the way we approach mental health is primarily from a treatment. If you have a higher acuity, if you're more complex, like, you'll get treatment. And that often catches people who have been doing this head down, coping, and just finally can't take it anymore approach. And I really wish that we were providing people with some support a lot earlier. And everybody, you don't have to, you know, you don't necessarily have to have a positive screen on a depression screening, or you don't have to have certain things. All you need to feel is an openness to kind of getting through a period a little bit easier. That's all I think we need. And I wish that we were connecting people with resources and doing that during the prenatal period, because so many people, myself included, don't have any idea that it is extremely common to be struggling and struggling more than you have ever struggled with feelings of, you know, symptoms of anxiety or depression.
Yeah, for sure. I really appreciate you bringing in that perspective that you don't have to have a diagnosis. You don't have to, there doesn't have to be something that somebody else says or whatever. It doesn't have to be a label at all.
Exactly. I think labels are pretty unhelpful. They kind of feed into that thing that we were talking about earlier, which is like the shame feeling. Like, we sometimes feel ashamed if we have a label, and labels, you know, can be helpful, but they can also be limiting, and your experience is valid and important no matter what. You know, that's what I want everybody to know. You know, it's yours. So, you know, it's only you really know what's going on with you. And nobody can kind of stick a label or tell you something that you are or not. Like, you know kind of what's going on.
Right. So for like what you were saying, people might be hesitant to reach out for support.
Yeah.
If they don't have, well, even if they're not sure what's going on, or something feels a little off, or that they just want more support, like that can just be, it's okay to want support. It doesn't have to mean anything.
Yes, exactly. It doesn't have to mean anything. And I don't know if this is a good time for me to talk about the work that we're doing.
Oh, for sure. Yes, I would love
to. Oh, great. Yes. Okay, cool. So yeah, that was, you know, we created, the team at Canopy created an audio-based program that's kind of customized to different things that you might be going through or experiencing based on a few different therapeutic techniques. One is compassion-focused therapy, which we've talked a little bit about. And then two are recommended by something called the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, which I didn't know exist, but it's something that tells us what kinds of things can have a lot of evidence behind them and can be effective for preventing the onset of different things. And so interpersonal therapy, which focuses on our relationships and communication and so important during this time. I think a lot of us, especially if we're not feeling great, we tend to isolate ourselves, but isolation on top of motherhood equals
Right.
And then cognitive behavioral therapy, which, you know, allows us to kind of bring awareness to the different, you know, the thoughts we might be having and understanding, you know, maybe that thought isn't producing something helpful. Maybe that thought isn't necessarily telling us something that's true, helping us understand the difference between thoughts and feelings and behaviors. And it sounds very clinical and stuff like that. And we designed it from, you know, research programs and stuff that had already had like a lot of evidence behind it. But we designed, you know, the actual program and how it is with moms. So it's actually talking about examples that are rooted in, you know, this is what you might be experiencing. This is what at this time, and this is kind of the specific link of this technique to an experience of motherhood. So you learn about the techniques, you learn about, you know, what's going on in your mind and your body potentially, and then you can practice. Little sessions are all under 5 minutes. And yeah, it's available through an app, not because we wanted to design an app, but that's, all of us are on our phones,
right.
Especially in those first few months. So, and you know, it was really for convenience. So it's audio and text in English and Spanish.
Oh, cool. That's amazing. I'm so glad to hear that it's in Spanish as well.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
So what kinds of other, you said the audio program, what kind of other things can people find there?
Yeah. So stories about people sharing their experiences of different things. We have a little bit of information about common challenges, you know, but, you know, a lot of moms, for example, are surprised that they don't feel bonded to their baby, especially common and first time moms. So we're really trying to shed light on things that people might be experiencing, but might not have a necessarily a way to understand it or know that it's really common, normal. We talk about sleep and relationships. And then we also have, you know, different ways of accessing emergency resources through the app. So if you need support right away, you can actually just call or text in English and Spanish if you're these kind of higher level resources, if that's something that you might need in that moment. You know, this is meant to be not a substitute for treatment, not a substitute for talking with a professional. It's meant to be something that you do on your own time, that you access when you feel that openness to it and want some support, but, you know, might not be ready for something else. But we want to make sure that people who are experiencing something that is a little bit more complicated or needs a little bit more help than we can provide, that that's easy and that you have multiple ways of doing that.
Right. Yes, absolutely. That's awesome. That's fantastic. So it's like a ton of support.
Yeah, it is actually, I guess, you know, it's funny because they always say, don't design something for yourself.
Why do they say that?
I don't know. People say that. I don't know. I've heard that quite a bit, but it is honestly really what I wish I had had during the, especially when I was expecting. Mm-hmm. I think my experience and my feelings about myself would have been really different if I had known, you know, had some coping strategies, had known what was going on, had access to other resources, just knowing, you know.
Right, some kind of explanation about what happens.
Right,
what exactly. Happen.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, I think that info and education is really key. Because if you don't know, then you blame yourself. It's just,
absolutely.
It happens every time.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. And usually when you find out, it's when things have gotten so challenging that it's hard to even get through the day or do anything. And so, yeah, so that's what we're doing. And, you know, we also do the programs are focused on the expecting period or new motherhood up to about a year, 18 months. But we also do have programs for fathers or caregivers, people who don't identify as a mother or father, but are a caregiver, maybe a grandma or, you know, somebody else in the family who's taking care of the baby.
That's fantastic. So how do people find out about it? I mean, other than we're talking about it right now and they can go to www.canopy.app.
That's right.
Yeah.
C-A-N-O-P-I-E. Spelled in the cute way. Yes, something. But anyway, it will autocorrect to Y, but it's Canopy with an IE. Yeah. And then, so we're working with some hospitals. We've got a NICU focused program that we offer through the app. So we sometimes are available to people through their insurance or through their doctors. We're also doing some research right now with some health systems on this kind of prevention-based mental health support with some of our research advisors and a perinatal psychiatrist at that health system. So we're really excited. You know, our goal has been to always, you know, stay really rooted in evidence, so really make sure like you're not going to learn anything here that isn't supported by lots of research papers. There's nothing like that, but it also, if you go to the app, it's designed in such a way that it's supposed to feel like a gift, like something that's nice that you're doing for yourself. And the images are supposed to feel nice and inclusive and more like a consumer product than like what you usually get from your doctor in terms of things you've got to do.
Right.
Yeah.
That's great. I'm really excited for people to find this app and check it out. I mean, it sounds like there are so many different ways that we show up in the world and different ways that we have needs. And, you know, being able to have access to multiple ways of getting support and also multiple avenues of learning and getting education. I mean, we don't all like hear things and learn in the same way. So like having this as an opportunity is a place to get that support and understanding is just helpful to be able to reach a lot of people.
Yeah. And I mean, this podcast is really doing that. So, you know, you're doing that hard and important work of getting people's personal stories and creating space for that education. And I just feel so grateful to you for what you're doing, because I just think that it is, it's so, so, so important. And you can reach anybody anywhere. And I just think that that's really beautiful. I think that's awesome.
Thank you. Thanks. I appreciate that. Well, then we're both doing that.
High five.
High five, right? High five. Awesome. Cool. Well, I really thank you for your time and coming on and sharing your story and being vulnerable here with us and then turning your experience into this beautiful support.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kat. I can't tell you how grateful I am to have been here and to be able to share a little bit. And I hope it reaches someone and can help a little bit.
Thank you. I know it will. You can find Anne on LinkedIn at Anne Wanlin, and you can go check out the Canopy app at www.canopie.app. Thank you again for joining us. Until next time. Thank you so much for joining us today. Please share this podcast. Together we can support moms and families so that no one has to deal with this alone. Come connect with us at momandmind.com.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.